understand the day's news. You can view our complete program schedule at kpft.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. I'm here with Egberto Willis. And this may end up being one of those shows that I wish was 2 hours. We'll see how that goes. All right. First thing I'd like to bring up, Egberto and I and several other folks were on a discussion panel after the showing of a documentary called Shadows of Liberty. It's a documentary film about the concentration of media in the hands of just a few big companies. Very thought-provoking. Obviously, as a documentary, every documentary, like anything else in media, has a point of view that they want to get forward. And like any other documentary, it's a little manipulative. And it always pays to be aware of when you're being manipulated, but that doesn't change the information that is contained in the documentary, which is really, really scary. I actually printed out a PowerPoint. And just really quickly, something like 6 media companies control approximately 90% of what we read, watch, or listen to. That's appalling. You know, it goes back to something I've mentioned on this show a few times, that among the 100-some radio stations that we have in Houston, 6 companies own over half of them. Now, when they say that 6 companies own 90% of what we read, watch, or listen to, understand that that's sort of mixed. Some are more into print, some are more into internet, some are more into movies or television or radio. But between the parent companies and the subsidiaries and the subsidiaries of the subsidiaries and the things that you don't even necessarily know that they own and control, that they influence, it's really, really scary. I may put that PDF up on my website. My website, by the way, and I always put up some information about tonight's show, including links to articles to which I might refer, or information that I think might be interesting on its own, relevant or not. thinkwingradio.com or thinkwing.org. Either one will take you to the same place. One of the things that came up in the panel conversation after the movie Shadows of Liberty was what can be done about it. And sort of a subset of that question is, how do you get low information voters to understand that they're not being exposed to as much information as maybe they could be because you've got so few companies controlling so much information? And mind you, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but, you know, they say there's an old story that even paranoids have real enemies. Even people that don't believe in conspiracies have to recognize conspiracies happen. So it came up a little bit on Twitter, and one of the questions that was posed at Randy Prine: how can we help low voters, low info voters, get it? And I made a comment that actually I first made at the panel discussion for this Shadows of Liberty, that what we might think of, you know, the FCC ultimately controls who can own what, at what point, media concentration becomes too great. And it really started during the Reagan administration, but apparently one of the pivotal things was a media ownership waiver that Fox Networks acquired. I think it was during the Clinton administration, but the Republican Congress in like 1994, perhaps. So the FCC gave them a waiver, and that was sort of the beginning of all this massive concentration of media ownership. So in the course of the discussion, it came up, well, you know, the FCC obviously isn't doing anything because they haven't done anything. They haven't changed it. They haven't revisited it. And it occurred to me, you know what? Maybe the Department of Justice is a place we need to go. Now, of course, the rules would be a little different for what would get them involved. First of all, it's very important that we understand media concentration is not a monopoly. Technically, a monopoly, mono, is one. It's not owned by one company. It's owned by approximately six or so companies. That constitutes an oligopoly. But an oligopoly can still be, technically, in restraint of trade. In restraint of trade is the kind of thing that triggers a Department of Justice investigation. So one of the things that occurred to me today is, okay, if you're trying to find some way in which they're in restraint of trade, well, they're not necessarily blockading people from buying time to express their ideas. They're not necessarily engaged in price fixing. So what kind of trade might they be in restraint of? Well, it occurred to me maybe what they're in restraint of is intellectual trade. Now, Egberto is kind of blinking at that. It's like, okay, what does that mean? I think when you talk about being in restraint of intellectual trade, it isn't the same as censorship. It's simply in restraint of the kind of variety of intellectual exchange that might occur if you didn't have so much media concentrated in so few hands. It doesn't have to be conscious restraint of trade. It just has to be effective restraint of trade. So if we consider intellectual thought as a form of trade with a form of value, whether intrinsic or inherent or material or immaterial, maybe that is a place where the Department of Justice can be encouraged to look at whether there might be a case there for overruling the FCC's ownership waivers and saying, no, you guys are really in restraint of a form of trade, and therefore you must spin off a number of these properties that you have and diversify media ownership. So that's, anyhow, a thing. I do want to make a point. We do have open forum tonight. So you can call and express your opinion on this or anything else that you might think of or that I might mention. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Media ownership. I think that if there's going to be an issue that's going to end up being vital in the first half of the 21st century, in this country, for the preservation of democracy as we think we know it, media ownership is going to come down to the nub, I think. That's going to be the thing that's going to make the difference. That and, of course, unlimited money in politics. Okay, another topic. Apparently, to absolutely nobody's surprise, Dick Cheney considers Obama the worst president in his lifetime. Now, he's older than me, but Obama isn't even the worst president in my lifetime. He actually made a number of comments, and you see, here's where I start going through my paper, which I have printed out, and then it's like, but where did I put it? Okay, here we go. So this particular article that I'm referring to was from Slate.com, and I do have a link to it as well as some others. Cheney thinks Barack Obama is the worst president in his lifetime. Asked to assess the president's handling of al-Qaeda, Cheney unsurprisingly pans Mr. Obama's performance and then adds, I think the threat is growing steadily and I think our capacity to deal with it is rapidly diminishing. My comment to that might be that over a decade of fighting two wars, what has diminished our warfighting capacity through degradation of human assets, materials, and money, not to mention public and political will, is the constant maintenance of wars. Then he goes on to say, He used to have significant criticism of Jimmy Carter, but compared to Barack Obama and the damage he is doing to the nation, it's a tragedy, a real tragedy, and we're going to pay a hell of a price just trying to dig out from his presidency. Now, I don't love Jimmy Carter. I have differences with Jimmy Carter. I don't think he was a terrific president. But to have been made to, for people to have been made to believe that he was such a horrible president is simply not true. There were things that didn't work out well, like Desert One, where he tried to rescue the Iranian hostages. He did try to point out that we were reaching an oil availability and price crisis. There were things he did that he didn't do great. There were things that he tried to do that he should be given credit for that might not have worked out as well as they could have. Some was his fault, some was not. Some are circumstances he inherited, some was poor leadership. But to say that he was a worse president, say, than George W. Bush, I think is a stretch. Let's see. He then goes on to say, I love this one. Cheney cries race card on Obama and Eric Holder. Mr. Rosen, who wrote the article on which this interview is based, noted that Obama and Attorney General Holder have suggested that racism is a factor in the criticism of them. Cheney responds, "I think they're playing the race card." Well, you know, there's a quote that is often misattributed to Sigmund Freud. I will paraphrase the misquote. Sometimes a racist is just a racist. So he says, Cheney goes on to say we criticize Barack or Holder because of race, just think it's obviously not true. My view of it is the criticism is merited because of performance or lack thereof, blah, blah, blah. And of course, what he doesn't understand is if your premise, at least subconsciously, starts from a place of racism, then of course you're going to say it has nothing to do with race, even though it has something to do with race. You know, people who have listened to me on this show for a while know that I draw a very clear distinction between racism and prejudice, that all racism is prejudice, but not all prejudice is racism. But sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and sometimes a racist is just a racist. Okay, I've got more, but we've got some phone calls. We do still have open lines. It's early in the show, which means everybody might actually get a nice chunk of time in which to discuss what's on their minds. 713-526-5738. And Egberto, if I may take the first caller, please, Gary. Gary, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Oh, okay. Well, you trumped me.
I trumped you?
Well,
Did I play a race card and trump?
About your first observation, and now you've gone on to something much more serious, the racism factor that might influence a lot of people to do everything they can to oppose Obama.
Even the subconscious racists.
And that's the word, subconsciously. That was in the paper the other day. But I called about how you talked about the monopoly of media.
Oligopoly.
And, well...
It's a difference.
Well, you did say monopoly, that it is an oligarchy, but there was a thing. I write poetry, and I go on to poetry sites on the Internet, and some years back they talked about the Gang of Five. And the Gang of Five were the five major publishers. There used to be 28 publishers in the 50s, and now they've been buying each other left and right, like the oil companies. And they're down to, like, five major publishers, and they're all, like, smunched up together. And they are the gatekeepers.
Yep.
And these small groups determine what writing and novels and poetry and literature is going to be produced, just like the media determines what information is going to be produced. And I don't know what that means. Maybe you can explain it. But as things seem to compress and companies buy companies, we seem to have a loss of information.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
That's my question.
Well, I think the way I see it, there are two ways that information / news is suppressed. Sometimes I think it's a conscious decision made because the people in charge have an agenda and they don't like information or news that doesn't fulfill their agenda. And by the way, a topic I want to get to tonight, and I absolutely want to, is what appears to be the cognitive dissonance of conservatives when it comes to wanting one thing but being against another thing that presumably would enable the thing they want to happen. This is a topic I absolutely want to get to. But to get to this one, I think that there is occasionally a conscious decision to suppress information that doesn't fit their worldview. In other cases, I think that sometimes it's an economic decision. It's all about eyeballs and revenue. When news was put under the entertainment divisions of a lot of different companies, now news was no longer a public service like it was until like maybe the 1970s. Now news was simply another revenue generator. And I think that then there are the subconscious biases where you try to be objective, but, you know, it's like being a juror in a trial. You can try to be objective, but sometimes when you bring your biases in, you cannot help but have them influence your decision.
I have one more question.
Okay.
If you didn't experience cognitive dissonance, would you even be a conservative? If you weren't stupid, would you be a Republican?
I don't want to use the word stupid. There are certain words I'm really careful with. Stupid.
Okay.
Hate. Ignorant. I have up and called people ignorant to their faces, but I don't see that as pejorative. I see that as simply a statement of what I consider fact, observable fact.
All right. Well, let's say frozen in time.
Even that isn't accurate. And you know what? Even the word conservative today, as we've discussed on this show many times, is really not accurate.
All right. Well, why do they say Democrat and Republican instead of progressive and regressive?
Well, Democrat and Republican are party names.
I understand.
Liberal has been turned into a pejorative so that liberals have now often felt forced to use the term progressive.
Well, isn't that the correct term?
I think liberal and progressive are sort of different flavors of the same thing. But
liberal and conservative are 50-year-old terms. I think it's time to move forward and say progressive and regressive or reactionary.
I would say modern conservatives are not conservatives in any historic sense. I think that they are reactionary and even oppressive, in some cases even fascistic.
Which explains the Obama situation.
That also, and racism. All right, I've actually got a couple more calls, so I'm going to give other people some chances. Thank you so much, Gary. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Egberto does have his own show Monday nights at 9 p.m., Politics Done Right. Here we do politics okay. He hates when I say that. But we do. I mean, he's already got the whole politics done right thing bottled up, so I can only do politics okay. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. Next up is Barry. Barry, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Yes, it's been a while since we talked. My call tonight is whether thinking liberal is an oxymoron.
Oh, Barry.
I believe the horrors of unlimited abortion, high taxes, unlimited illegal immigration, destruction of traditional male-female marriage that are embraced by the liberals is a sickening setback.
Let me ask you some questions.
What can be a move forward?
May I ask you some questions?
Please.
Okay, first of all, you obviously do not believe in abortion. Do you believe in birth control?
That's in very limited circumstances, yes.
Well, I mean, you believe in birth control or you don't. Under what circumstances
yes,
do you believe in it?
Yes, but you believe in abortion or you don't.
Well, you believe in a right to choose to have an abortion.
I believe in a right to choose to have your children go to charter schools rather than have them stuck in failing public schools, which the liberals choose to do. That's the choice that poor women should have.
Well, let's try to stay focused because we don't have time to discuss all of the liberal versus conservative.
I believe that a woman has the right to choose to have sex or choose to not have sex.
All right. Does she have the right to have birth control used in the course of having sex? Or does a man, for that matter? Are you okay with birth control?
If it's yes or no, then I would say
okay,
yes.
Then give, well, I don't see how it's obvious. Give me the yes and give me the no.
I don't want to get caught in birth control.
No. Well, okay, let me give you the reason that I'm asking. I mentioned a little earlier when I was talking to Gary about this cognitive dissonance. One of the things that I have found fascinating, and I feel like I'm just beginning to get to a point in my life where I'm wrapping my head around it, is how conservatives can be against something like abortion, but also be against something like birth control, which would be an obvious way of avoiding abortion. So if you're against abortion and you're also against birth control, I'm curious to know what the rationale is behind those two apparently contradictory positions.
They're not as contradictory as all that, but let me ask you a question, though. Are you in favor of unlimited abortion? The same girl can have 8, 9, and 10 abortions, where abortion becomes a little more than sport.
I'm not going to let you off the hook by I'm not going to let you off the hook by answering a question with a question. I asked you a question.
I said, yes, I support some form of birth control.
But you didn't tell me under what circumstances you agree in permitting birth control. Because, I mean, either you agree that people can use birth control or they can't.
I might want to spend a weekend with Miss Trixie, and I don't want her to get pregnant. I mean.
Okay, so in other words, for recreational sex with Miss Trixie, you can use birth control.
Yes.
Okay, and under what circumstances would you not be... Under what circumstances would you not be permitted to use birth control?
If me and the missus decide to have triplets, I would not want birth control.
But that's not permission, that's choice.
Come on, boss. I mean, we're going to be healthy on this.
This is an important question. I mean, you're asking me to defend my views. I'm asking you to defend yours. I'll defend mine.
Said, yes, I will support birth control on a weekend with Miss Trixie. I said, no, if I were married and we want to have triplets. We need to get past that.
But that's not permission, that's choice.
Unlimited abortion.
But that's not permission, that's choice. Now, do I agree, do I believe
no,
there
should... No, you
support
unlimited abortion.
I'm going to answer your question in just a moment. But first, I just want to clarify that you have said that it's okay to have birth control for recreational sex. You also agree that you should be able to make the choice about whether or not to use birth control based on whether or not you want to have children. So that was the answer, I think, is fairly stated. Okay, I will now answer your question. Do I believe in unlimited abortion?
The same girl having 8, 9, 10 abortions. That Miss So What If Samantha Jackson goes out and bears down Henry, she can always, have an abortion. So what? Whatever. Go ahead.
I think as an ethical question, I cannot agree with unlimited abortion, and I certainly would not encourage an unlimited number of abortions as a substitute.
You're coming around, okay?
Now, wait a second, as a substitute for birth control. However, I think that we have medically and scientifically arrived at a very fair boundary line where a nervous system has not formed, there is not a brain. Therefore, you have a non-viable fetus that is not alive in the brain-dead, brain-live sense. And I think that that's a boundary that we should be able to agree on.
Should we draw the line at partial birth abortion?
Well, partial birth abortion is one of those conservative...
No question.
Oh, hold on. Now, you see, but you can't interrupt me when I'm answering your question. A partial birth abortion, that term is a conservative meme. It is used to make an inflammatory description of a medical procedure. I mean, there are lots of conservative memes that I object to. I think this is one of the more insidious ones. You know, this is like Frank Lutz comes up with this stuff. Partial birth abortion is simply a form of abortion. And using the term partial birth is simply a way of inflaming opinion about what is actually going on during an abortion.
Okay, but as far as the other liberal horrors of high taxes, confiscating people's private property, opening up the southern border to the refugees from the third world, and being weak in defense, are you okay with that?
All right, you're going to have to give me one at a time. Don't give me a gunny sack.
I said the horrors of confiscating private wealth.
Okay, first of all, taxes are not confiscation of private wealth. They are the cost of living in a civil society.
At 55% of income, yes.
I'm sorry? Say again?
At 55%, it becomes confiscation.
No, it doesn't. During Eisenhower, it was 95%, but you always had deductions.
Not Eisenhower anymore.
Yeah, but Eisenhower was a Republican. Eisenhower was pro-union. Nixon was pro-union.
Mr. Eisenhower, okay?
Well, you can't just pick and choose the history you want to pick and choose.
And David Julius Caesar was 100%.
Well, In the days of Julius Caesar, he was an emperor. He did not. He was not. He did not represent himself as a nation of laws. He was a law unto himself. So we're not even going to go into Caesar. We're not going to go into the Roman Empire because divergence is one way that conservatives, in my opinion, not just conservatives, but often conservatives, changing the subject is how many people, largely conservatives, try to win arguments.
Okay, you support confiscation of wealth.
Didn't say that. You are creating a straw man argument by saying something I didn't say and claiming those words came out of my mouth.
You support high taxes, right?
I support taxes that are progressive, that I think if you have a class of people that control, if you have 1% of the population controlling 40% of the wealth, I think they ought to at least pay 40% of the taxes.
Suppose they are genius entrepreneurs and that is Darwinian supremacy. My God, you got a problem there too?
I have a problem with people who take advantage.
With Darwinian supremacy.
All right, Barry, I've loved having you on, but I think as long as you're going to keep cutting me off when I try to respond to anything you say, I think that we don't have a discussion here.
I'm sorry. Last question.
All
right. You support unlimited illegal immigration?
No, of course
okay.
not.
That's fine. End on a high note.
Okay.
You're still a long way to go. But
no Democrat, no liberal, no progressive favors unlimited illegal immigration, period. I say that with a feeling of great comfort and confidence. All right, have a great night, Barry. Call back sometime. But next time, you can't be answering questions with questions, and you have to let me answer your questions. Okay, I'm going to do a quick, slightly early ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. I've got Egberto Willis here. He's been very quiet, which I guess means I've been doing an okay job. So far. Was there something I left out? Houston, KPFT, 90.1 FM. Okay. Anyway, Wayne, you're up next. How you doing tonight, Wayne? You're on the air.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey, you called early enough this time.
Yeah, man, I sure hate to find a guy like Barry.
No, Barry, you know what? I'm not upset with Barry.
No, you shouldn't be upset
I'm
with
not.
Barry.
I'm not. And I like when he calls because the fact is he's not unique, and I think he raises questions in ways that people have them, and I think that's the only way to really even attempt to change minds or open minds or get people to think about alternative ways of seeing things.
Well, I kind of tend to differ with that, Mike, and I might differ with you about that. I tend to think that, you know, I was reading the paper today, and I was looking at Red Face there, what his name is, Cornyn.
Oh.
And Cornyn is supposedly so upset with Democrats about this bill that they got going on about immigration and this abortion thing. And he makes all these claims, but the Democrats are progressives, Democrats and progressives are trying to change the way this was. But now if you're going to have a partisan bill in Congress, and you got two sides working to try to come to a compromise, and you say, okay, I'm not going to change, then that's not the Democrats that's not changing, it's you. That's your position. You want that position. But what I want to understand is, and I'll let you speak when I finish saying this, is why is it that a man wants to be in a woman's reproductive system? That's Barry again. That goes back to Barry again, too. You understand what I'm saying?
It does.
But none of them wants to pay for women having children that they cannot afford. They do not want to pay their taxes.
I thank you, Wayne, because I think what you've done is you've given me this opportunity now to talk about the cognitive dissonance factor.
Go ahead. I'm going to let you run now.
Okay. You want to hang on or you want to go?
I'll still be here when you get through.
Okay.
Because I'm not finished, because I've got one thing to say about another crook in Texas, and that's Tom DeLay.
All right. I'll tell you what, because now I've got a couple of other people waiting in line. Why don't you finish your Tom DeLay, and then I'll respond.
Well, I just don't understand. You know, I heard that in passing today, what they supposed to give him this great honor or something. What was the honor that they gave him?
They let him out of jail?
They did. Well, he never went to jail.
Yeah, well, that's
so
a damn shame.
He already had bought his way out of debt. So what was the honor that they gave him? I don't know, because I didn't truly hear it all. But I know that crooks in Texas, I can name a few of them. That would be Tom DeLay and probably Cornyn and that other senator that we got running around here on a rampage, Cruz, and those 47 that signed that letter.
Yeah, the traitors.
The traitors. And I really think that people ought to start filing a letter against them or getting a petition against them to actually make them traitors to this country.
If you listen to my show from last week, and I actually literally encourage you to do that, I went into a long discussion about what the actual definition of treason is in this country versus what Lawrence O'Donnell has called a term of art, where you can use the term traitor or treason as sort of an idiom that has no legal weight, kind of like legal insanity versus...
Well, let me stop you right there.
Well, now, hold on a second.
I'm going to let you go ahead,
okay.
But I'm going to give you this.
Because I got Ponji waiting.
I'm a veteran, and I do know the difference between treason and traitor, okay? If you go against this country and you are supposed to represent this country, you can be called a traitor. Treason is one thing, traitor is another. This is what they have done by circumventing what they did and going against the president of the United States. They committed a traitorous act.
I agree totally with that.
They committed a traitorous act.
I agree.
They did.
They committed
and
a traitorous act.
They should be brought up on it.
But
if nothing else but fired as in Congress that they did that.
It is my opinion that all 47 of these guys ought to resign. If there had been a Democrat
too
on that list, I would include him or her.
And whatever.
They should all resign. They should all resign. Even if the governors of their states appoint Republicans to replace them, they should all resign. They have shamed the country. They have shamed the Senate. They have weakened our position in international negotiations. They have undercut every future president. They should all resign as some form of contrition.
Not only did they do that, but they betrayed the flag.
They betrayed our country. Not
they
by the legal
the
definition
flag
of treason, but in every way that matters.
Yes. Okay, now go ahead on. I'll hang up and let you talk.
I appreciate
now
that. Thanks
okay
so much for
all
calling,
right,
Wayne. You did a good thing calling early. We'll have to do
all
that
right
again.
Okay.
All right. Take care. All right. This thing about conservative logic, and Ponji, I know you've been waiting for a while, so I want to get to you pretty quickly. Just be patient with me a minute. Why conservatives are against abortion, but they're also against birth control? It is because for many conservatives, it's not an issue of whether you have an abortion or whether you use birth control. Now, Barry, I actually think Barry is not an unreasonable person. He's willing to have protected sex with Miss Trixie. And he says that when he wants to have children, he doesn't want to be obligated to use birth control. I think that that's a perfectly reasonable point of departure for a conversation. On the other hand, the conservative view of not permitting a woman to choose an abortion, but also not permitting learning about birth control or how to have safe sex, the reason that those two things actually go together in the conservative mind, consciously or unconsciously, is because they just don't think you should have sex. That's my opinion. I think conservatives believe you should not have sex. If you're going to have sex, you should be willing, if you're going to do the crime, do the time. So if you're going to have sex and you're going to get pregnant, you should be forced to carry the baby, not only as punishment to you, but as an object lesson to others. So in the case of abortion and birth control, I think that that goes together in a way that becomes logical in the conservative mind. I think that I think it was Gary's question about why do they believe in small government when they want to regulate women's reproductive systems? Well, I think that's a matter of not recognizing that they themselves are actually sort of fascists. They want their liberty, except where they don't want people to have liberty. They don't understand what liberty means. They don't understand what freedom means. They don't understand what it means to live in a civil society where people get to choose, even if you don't always like their choices. They don't understand, for example, that the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, is not some kind of liberal pinko conspiracy. If they really are pro-Constitution, there is no organization in the United States that's more dotting the I's and crossing the T's to the Constitution than the ACLU. In many ways, you should see them as the most conservative force we have in American judicial politics. And then you get to Senator Cruz. Now, you have climate change deniers. Now, apparently, Senator Cruz recently had a hearing. He's on the science committee in the Senate that has control over NASA funds. I think he's leading the committee. And he apparently wants NASA to de-emphasize climate change research. Now, here's another interesting thing about conservatives. Conservatives are very tied up in principle. They don't care about cause and effect. They don't care if their policies fail. What they care about, apparently, is does this subscribe to conservative principles? And if it's right in terms of conservative principles, the outcome doesn't matter. You know, liberals, for all their faults, I think to some extent are willing to be guided by experience and are willing to change course based on experience. But let's consider this thing about tax cuts, what Barry calls confiscation taxes. Assuming that a reduction in taxes leads to increased economic activity and increased tax revenue, there must be a sweet spot. There always has to be a sweet spot. So there has to be a point where more taxes shrink economic activity and shrink tax revenue, and lower taxes don't increase economic activity enough to increase tax revenue. Now, according to the conservative ideology, if you just keep cutting taxes, then economic activity will increase and jobs will increase and tax revenue will increase. But by that logic, taken to its logical extreme, if you didn't have any taxes at all, government revenue would be infinite. So there has to be a place where you can no longer say we need to cut taxes. The conservatives have never picked that spot because, in their minds, there is no such spot. So this is what you have to look at when you're dealing with conservatives, is subtext, like the issue of anti-abortion, anti-birth control, and a denial of reality where adhering to conservative principles is more important than looking at outcomes. And I think when you start to see those kinds of things in that way, you begin to understand the conservative mindset and the problems in dealing with them. I'm going to get to Panji now because Panji has been waiting for over 13 minutes, and that is a patient, patient person. You are on the air, Panji. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Mike. I really appreciate your conversation, and I am just really happy that I was able to tune in on it. But, however, I want to comment on something Barry said about the abortions. My thing is, what gives a man the right to say whether or not it's okay for a woman to have an abortion? My thing is, you're not going to be with this woman always, or this could have been a one-night stand, or perhaps this lady could have been raped. So with something like that happening, do you think that this lady would want to carry a child that was not conceived in a lovable way? Do you think that she should raise a child out of rape and not be upset about it? Better yet, when a woman has a child and could not have an abortion because another man said that she couldn't, will that man be around to take care of that child? Will that man give that woman money to support this child? It costs over $200,000 to raise a child in a proper manner.
Oh, that's
so
an old number. It's more
cash,
than that.
Are you going to help her?
I think that the Republicans, the conservatives, have proven that they're real concerned about human life before birth, and they're apparently real concerned about human life after death. In between, I think you're pretty much on your own.
You know, I think that's sad.
I think it's true. It is sad, but I think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think also that the point you make, you know, women, people, go to state capitals to protest these restraints on legal abortion, trying to find different workarounds for what has been considered for many years a constitutional right for a woman to choose to have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes now what I imagine is when these conservatives see these protests, I think that on some level, either really or in their minds, I think they're laughing. And the reason I think they're laughing is because they're thinking, this is exactly what we want. Don't you understand that when you talk about the women should have a right to choose, we don't want women to choose. I think that in a very archaic way, conservatives see women, as is done in many cultures, they see women as temptresses, that men could be strong if only women weren't so tempting. So, yeah. You know, it goes all the way from doing whatever you can to keep women from permitting men to be naughty. So it's up to the women to make men faithful and to not be adulterous. And it goes back to everything from denying them birth control and abortions to covering their bodies from head to toe.
And I understand that. But, Mike, you know, this sets us back as women 100 years.
Believe it or not, it only sets women back about 60 years, because that's about how long birth control and abortion have been considered acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you watch a movie like In the Heat of the Night, which is a fabulous, right. fabulous movie. And what's fascinating, and I hope I'm not giving out a spoiler to anybody, but it ends up that this whole story with murder and racism and mayhem and hatred and fissures in this society of this town, and it all starts with one little girl who gets pregnant and wants to get an abortion. The whole right. movie revolves around that one premise. There used to be something called the Mann Act, which actually was in force in many states until the 1970s or later. And the Mann Act, you could see whole movies up till the 1960s that basically create scenarios that create either drama or comedy based on an unmarried couple renting a room together or rooming together in a hotel or an apartment. Entire storylines based on this, because conservatives had taken a law which was intended to prevent white slavery and mm-hmm. and transporting women across lines for purposes of prostitution. And they had turned it into a way to prevent men and women from even being in the same room together unless they're married.
Oh, wow. Now, you know, I'm currently studying history at Texas Southern University, and the Mann Act is something that I'm going to definitely have to look into, because, like I said before, your conversation is very, very interesting, so I want to make sure that I can hit the nail on the head with the next time when I call in so that we can have a really tangible conversation, and I'm enjoying this. I just had no idea that, you know, men are just, you know, at the point that they just want to take over women's bodies.
Well, they've always been at that point. They want to control them when they want them, and they want to prohibit them when you shouldn't have them.
Right.
And it's always the woman's fault. The Mann Act, by the way, it's M-A-N-N. It's actually named after the guy who proposed the law in Congress. And if you go to my – I mean, you can do research in many different places. But I also did a little piece on this on my website, thinkwingradio.com, thinkwing.org. If you go into the search window and just type in Mann Act, it should pull up that story.
Okay, I'm going to definitely check it out. And I really appreciate the time on the air with you, Mike, and I'm hoping that you have a wonderful night tonight, okay? And I'm going to keep on listening to you.
I appreciate that, and call as well.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Honig. I've got Egberto Willis here. So far, he's been very well behaved, so I guess I've been doing an okay job. He has his own show Mondays at 9 p.m., Politics Done Right. And I guess now on the air, next up is Rick. Rick, you're on the air with me. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Mike?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on, I think it was Barry's comments about Miss Trixie. First off, I think it's incredibly convenient, you know, that he could use birth control with Miss Trixie. But if it was his wife, then she should not be allowed. First
he didn't
off,
say that.
Why is it your choice what your wife does?
Yes.
Second, why is it okay for you to go have sex with Miss Trixie?
You know, I actually think that Barry is not an unreasonable guy, and he's not a dumb guy. I think he just hasn't entirely considered the implications of some of his contradictory perspectives.
Well, this is the problem that we have in our society, because conservatives, which I would actually identify with fiscally.
I'm the most conservative liberal here at the station.
We might get along well, Mike. I would identify as conservative fiscally. However, their social policies are archaic. And I think this is the problem that they have not seen with their platform. I don't know how they haven't seen it, because it's plain as day.
Egberto wants to make a comment, and then I may respond to that.
Yeah, I just want to I think in the past you could say that conservatives, their fiscally conservative policies actually made sense, because it was rooted on simply small government, and that is really a choice, right? Whether you want to have larger or smaller government. However, the reality is their fiscal policies today make absolutely no sense because it simply does not compute.
Well, they're not conservative. They're libertarian.
Yeah, but it's worse
than libertarian.
And libertarian
is every man for himself.
It's simply dishonest. If you take a look at the new budget that just came out, it was a dishonest piece of writing. So I think we shouldn't even give credence to them being honest with their fiscal house at all.
But I think
I'm not arguing whether or not any one party or platform or current set of peoples identified therein are right and or wrong. My point simply is that, you know, to be quote unquote conservative should mean that you're for policies that tend to keep things going as is. I think it's incredibly asinine that in, you know, 2015, we're still arguing whether or not the woman has a right to have a birth control pill or whether or not they have the right to have an abortion. I think the biggest and most factual argument for abortion came from the authors of Freakonomics. I forget one of the authors. I know the other is Stephen Levitt. I can't remember the other, but they put forth a very factual argument as to access to abortions decreases crime rates. And if you think about it, it makes perfect sense.
It can make perfect sense.
When you have mothers who are young, old, whatever, who have, you know, got pregnant, be it rape or be it consensual sex, and it just happened, they, you know, maybe they thought they were past the age, and now, oh, it turns out, hey, maybe it happened. Who knows? Who knows how they got pregnant? But to force that person to go through with a pregnancy that they did not want in the first place, and this is especially true with cases of rape and incest, how do you think that mother is going to feel towards their child if they were forced to go through with pregnancy or forced to go through with childbirth with something they didn't want in the first place? Now you're stuck raising that child in a society that barely gives you anything to support that child. You don't want to support that child because it was conceived of something that you hate. You look at them every day because that child is, let's say, the product of rape or incest or who knows what, and you end up hating that child. What are you telling that child? You're okay. Telling that child they're worthless. What is a child who grows up worthless feeling do?
I'm going to interrupt
worthless
that.
Actions.
Rick, I'm going to interrupt
and
you.
These are the people that tend, it's much more likely for someone who grew up in that situation to become a criminal. I'm not saying that all unwanted pregnancies turn into criminal behaviors later, but the facts are that the chances go up. And it drives me insane that conservatives will spout all this stuff about, oh, you should, you know, live with what you've got. But then when it comes to the other hand, now we've got all these people who are growing up on welfare because they weren't wanted in the first place.
Okay, Rick, I'm going to try to stop you there because I don't know that you've said anything I disagree with, but I'm going to make a point and then I'm going to give a couple more people a chance before we go off the air.
Absolutely.
The point that I want to make goes back to now this idea that I am trying to promulgate that what you say is perfectly reasonable. It makes logical sense. It is not the way the conservative mind, in my opinion, works. The conservative mind doesn't think forward enough to that. What they think about is their ideas of right and wrong, their ideas of reward and punishment. They don't worry about if you have an unwanted child, it might increase the crime rate. They don't worry about an unwanted child might be caused by rape. All of this is about punishment. It can be punishing the men. It can be punishing the women. I suppose, in a sense, it ends up punishing the children. They don't worry about outcomes. They worry about conservative principles. And in this particular case, when you're talking about abortion versus birth control versus social programs, you're talking about conservative principles and outcomes be damned. And I think until liberals and progressives and Democrats generally begin to understand that you cannot reason with that perspective, you have to understand it and figure out a way to address it on their terms, or just vote them out of office where they have no power. But until that happens, you have to understand it on their terms and figure out how to address it on their terms, their black and white notion of right and wrong and how things should be. Thank you so much.
I agree with you completely, and that's why I try to point out the very factual studies, of people, economists, such as Stephen Levitt. And again, I want to point back to, it's incredibly convenient that, someone can say, oh, my wife can't have birth control, but the hooker that I'm going to go see must take birth control. How hypocritical are you, sir, or whomever? And, you know, it's incredibly interesting to me that, you know, they can see far enough for the, you know, personal gratification, but they can't see far enough ahead to the actual responsibilities of, you know, what would happen if someone that you had sex with had a child and thus produced that child to live in our society.
It's incredibly
convenient that people pick and choose when to, quote-unquote, be conservative and when they don't, and I think it's quite disgusting.
But when you're arguing,
in my opinion, a conservative should be someone who's looking out for everybody.
I agree. I got to let you go, Rick, but I want to say this. I think that Rick and others, including in past times myself, I think that we all fall into the trap, and we need to stop falling into the trap of putting forward rational arguments from a liberal progressive perspective and understand that that is not the kind of person that we're arguing with. We're arguing with a person for whom outcomes does not matter. What matters is their sense of ethics, their sense of morality. They will try to enforce that, and outcomes don't matter. So we have to figure out how to argue with people that don't think in the same way that we do. It's a cultural difference, essentially. Thanks so much for calling, Rick. I appreciate the time. I hope you'll call back again. We need to move on because I've got a couple more folks. I believe James is next. James, you're on the air. Thanks for being patient. How are you doing tonight?
Doing very well. And yourself?
Thank you. I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, first off. You know, an interesting conversation. Really wanted to say something about the conservatives and the reduction of taxes. Every year you hear the reduction of taxes, and it just boggles my mind because sometimes, well, this is the deal. We are still at war, and we continue to say lower taxes. And it has been an anomaly because every time during war, when we have been at war, even though now it doesn't affect the everyday person per se, but taxes have never been lowered. And with our staggering debt, you would think that we would have some more type of corporate tax.
Even Johnson had a tax surcharge during the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Even with a guns and butter policy, he still had a tax surcharge.
Man, it's interesting. People tend to like Johnson, like Kennedy over Johnson, but Johnson did more for this country in that time frame than Kennedy did.
Kennedy had great potential. Johnson was a great president, and unfortunately his legacy is still damaged by Vietnam. In many other ways, he was one of our greatest presidents.
I concur. I concur wholeheartedly. But this is the thing. You know, with the way conservatives think about, back to Reagan with the trickle-down theory and, you know, you lower taxes on corporations and they're going to create more jobs. It's an oxymoron at best. The problem with that is, you know, since Reagan, or starting with Reagan, but the corporate taxes have gone down. And if you look back, Jimmy Carter left this country with approximately $500 billion in debt.
Actually, I think it was less than that. I think it was more like $350 billion in national debt.
Oh, well, I'm going toward the high side.
Okay.
Whereas Reagan, when you had the $750 hammers, $450 toilet seats, when the defense budget went sky high, you had Patco, you had the trains derailing, you had all this mayhem, and this economy went to pot, where they named it Reaganomics. Why these people still want to cling to Reagan as the best sliced bread, I have no idea.
Well, what's interesting is so many of the things that they call Reagan-esque, Reagan didn't do, wouldn't do, and never did.
Correct.
Reagan raised taxes. Reagan quadrupled the debt. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a story that I remember was written up at the time that, you know, Carter put forward a fiscal 1981 budget. And his fiscal 1981 budget had something like a $40 billion deficit. Now, keep in mind, at this time, the national budget was something like $500 million a year.
Yeah.
So he had a $40 billion deficit, I think it was. And Reagan then came in after criticizing all of these budgetary policies. Reagan came in and he quadrupled that deficit.
Yes.
And ended up, or quintupled it. I think he ended up with like a $200 billion budget deficit, which even today sounds like a lot of money. And
well,
I remember
I think it was
that
even higher than that.
Hold on. But here's the punchline. Carter, when he was interviewed about that at some later point, said, you know, we had tried so hard to keep the budget deficit to just around $40 billion, and we thought it would be just politically unacceptable to go higher than that, and we'd cut as much as we could. And Reagan came in, and he just went crazy. I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Well, he went berserk.
He went berserk, and he took a national debt, and a lot of people don't understand the difference between the national debt and a
and
budget
deficit.
I once had to call the Chronicle about that and correct their city editor. Believe it or not, I've told that story. And people don't understand that national debt, you know, there was a point during the Bush administration where I did some sort of what they call back of the envelope math.
Yeah.
Where if they were not dealing with the Reagan deficits, the Reagan budget, the Reagan national debt, instead of running a $250 billion deficit, they would have been running a $120 billion surplus.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said when during that Bush era when they were trying to report that the debt didn't mean anything.
Yes.
And it's okay, how can you say that the debt doesn't mean anything when you have all these inflationary measures that are floating around and the real money is not being seen by the people?
I think what they mean is that Republican debt doesn't matter. And Democratic debt, you see, so what you have now is Republicans, Democrats, they say, are tax and spend. Republicans are borrow and spend.
I gotcha. Different ideology, huh? But
yeah.
The outcome
so,
is that the middle class is being decimated right now. Now, they say how many thousands of jobs are being created every month or every quarter. Well, a lot of these are, okay, decent jobs, but you know, raise a family of four, I don't think so.
I will go a little further, and I will point out that when you look at the conservative notion of, and what was I going to say? I'm being rescued by having only 1 minute left on the air to think of what I was going to say.
Saved by the bell.
Oh man. Okay, I'm
You're
sorry.
Saved by the bell.
I remember it was going to have something to do. You made me think of another indication of cognitive dissonance between Republicans and Democrats, between conservatives and liberals, that apparently only some kinds of debt are bad and other kinds of debt don't matter.
Yeah.
They're not even saying they're good. They just don't matter. Well, apparently I had my mental block at just the right time. Thank you so much for calling, James. I hope you'll call back sometime.
Very enjoyable.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and Egberto Willis here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Thank you so much for the phone calls. Sorry for the couple of people that dropped off the line. And I'll just leave it with what I think is one of the most important things to remember. If your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. Go out and vote, damn it. See you next week.
The 2015 Sounds of Texas Music Series is about to begin. KPFT Houston is proud to help present three outstanding concerts at the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe with legendary musicians from Texas and beyond. Saturday, March 21st, one of Texas's finest singer-songwriter couples, Kelly Willis and Bruce Robison, will take the stage at the Crichton Theater. Rising star John Fulbright will also perform a complete set. Saturday, May 9th, three great performers will share the stage in an unforgettable evening featuring legendary Texas rocker Joe Ely, soulful songstress Ruthie Foster, and gifted storyteller Paul Thorne. The series finishes Saturday, June 6th, with the terrific double bill of Uncle Lucius and beloved Texas singer-songwriter Ray Wiley Hubbard. For season tickets, call 936-441-7469, extension 201. Visit soundsoftexasmusicseries.com for more details. Don't miss the Sounds of Texas Music Series at the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe, presented by the Friends of Conroe, a Montgomery County nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
Every weekday morning at 8, KPFT welcomes you to a new experiment in community radio. New and improved, Open Journal features interviews, talk, music, and community. Open Journal airs weekdays at 8 a.m. and brings you the best and brightest voices that Houston and surrounding areas have to offer. Have a guest or topic idea? Just drop by KPFT's website to share or visit us on Twitter and Facebook to give your ideas. Tune in to Open Journal at 8 a.m.